outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
Hey, I had no idea that buying this house was going to be preparable for living in this house.
Okay.
Remember when we started, man, we bought the house, but we couldn't actually use the house.
Uh-huh.
2 weeks, they got to live here. So the last week, we're trying to get all these projects that we're working on currently, the house getting almost done. So one is a table that we had for the den in the home, for the kitchen area.
Okay.
And they've been trying to get it for a long time. It's made to match the counter, so it's a special deal. They finally tell me, you need your table today. So cool. Here comes the table.
Yeah.
They ding around with it for a while. Then they turn it upside down. They do some other things and they leave it in the kitchen upside down saying, we can't turn it over for 3 days.
What?
What did I do wrong? What? I'm going to get a table today. Yeah, it's the same thing. I have the table. I paid for the table. I just can't use the table. And then we finally get some of the window coverings to come in, and the guy's hanging them doing this, and he puts on, he's straightening this whole thing out, and he goes, now you can't pull this shut for 3 days. Now, we've been living behind paper towels for 2 months. Sarah tapes them up every night, moves them back. So we've been living with that. Now he's in caves for 3 days. I went, not surprised. And then he goes, what? And the contractor's wife just starts laughing. I'm going, yeah, I have the coverings. I paid for the coverings, but I can't use them for 3 days because they've got to hang out. Why is this the theme of this house? It has driven me absolutely batty because just about the time... Oh, good. We have a table to sit at now to eat lunch and dinner together, Sarah. But we don't have it yet. Or we're getting furniture painted, but it's not painted yet. Or when it is painted, can't use it for 3 days because the paint has to cure. I was not built for the construction life. This is what I would enjoy doing to other people. I don't like having it done to me.
So you'd be okay with the sadistic doing it to others and giving them these arbitrary timelines. You'd be okay with that one.
I realize that makes me sound bad. And I certainly hope they're not arbitrary deadline. I hope they're not going, let's just do this to Wayne to see how long before he blows a gasket.
Let's see how many of these 3 day timelines he can accept.
Yeah
Wayne, we just put in the faucet in the sink, but you got to wait 3 days for it to cure.
It's just like that. Oh, I've got the new toilet in. But you can't use it for 3 days. Oh, really? Oh, okay. That's going to be tough because you took the old one out. But
continue to use the construction outhouse.
It's just, except we haven't had one here, so that wouldn't help either. Yeah. Anyway, things are coming together. The 3 days are up on most of those things, so now we can finally use some of that stuff. But it just was more than I could bear last week.
So do you have a tree officially living in the middle of your house?
So far, it's still alive.
Awesome.
Did I not say that last week? I thought we talked about my tree.
We did. You said it was being planted, but we didn't know. I didn't know whether or not it was up and still doing well.
It is so beautiful. Everybody who comes in, because you can't see the atrium area. It's a little corner in this hallway that it's faces the front room. But you come in the front room, and you can't see it till you walk along the hallway. And all of a sudden... Like there was a worker coming through today to fix something in the back bedroom. And he comes through and he stops and goes, wow. His eyes just light up. He goes, wow. And then he just keeps walking. It's quite a deal. And we love our little tree. We're thinking about naming him something, but we haven't yet. And it's just such a calming, wonderful. Now we got that. We did though. Here's Friday. We got the fountain for that space, a little wall waterfall of rock.
Okay.
So now we have this not only beautiful tree, but this soothing sound that comes from there. Very gentle water tinkling down the wall. Beautiful. Until the pump went batty, and then we had to get the pump fixed. So other than that.
Already?
Yeah, we couldn't use it for 3 days, and I turned. No, I'm kidding. That did not happen. But we did have a pump because they forgot. They put the pump in, everything, put a little water in, they got it running, and they closed it all up, and then they didn't put more water in. So,
burned the pump out.
It didn't burn it out, but it came in, it was making all this noise. I went, what? So I dumped water in there really quickly thinking they must have not put water in here. Cause there's a big tank that the thing sits on. And then there's a shelf that goes above it and rock above the shelf. So you can't see down into the tank. And I think they forgot to fill the tank because we filled it since and it runs fine, but it was making weird noises. So we had to have them come out today thinking maybe they fan did burn out, but the fan had fallen against the cement walls. It was making noise. So, because it does no good to have a waterfall with gentle trickling water down a wall if the pump is louder than the trickling.
That is very true. If you hear a in the background.
So now we've got it working today. It's all good. I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to the 900th episode of The God Journey, which is a milestone of sorts.
What does that even translate to? How many years The God Journey has been going for?
It's been going 19 years.
Okay.
It predates my granddaughter, who's going to be 19 in November. So,
wow.
Yeah. My two granddaughters and grandson were almost born on the podcast. Usually something was happening and we'd say, I got to go to the hospital. And now they've all grown up and like they're adult type people. And it's odd to think it's something we thought we'd do for a few years and it just keeps finding a life and keeps reinventing itself. And it's been one of the greatest joys of my life to be have a venue to talk about things that matter, I think, to people and to get the emails we get and help people navigate their journeys. It's been really sweet.
Well, and to have the breadth of recording, right? I mean, to have a documented breadth of recording for almost closing in on 20 years, that's pretty wild. You know, to be able to have that and to be able to look back on that and see like the elements of transformation and change and growth and perspective and expansion of your understanding of Father's love over that time period. That's wild to have that kind of timeline.
It is amazing. And I think someday if I go back and listen to some of this, because I look at the titles of them and remember what I was learning in that space, because almost everything with the God Journey has been, this is real time, the things I'm processing and struggling with, or Brad was, or you are. It's very real part of my life. So it's not, you know, a orchestrated teaching of all the things you should know and believe and all that, but it's been my journey and our journey and a lot of guests we've had in various ways on things. And I tell you what, it's when I look back to, you know, Gaze With Me, to the prayer dance, there's so many podcasts back there. Just the title evokes the trajectory of the journey and things I'd learned up till then and things I've learned since then that has shaped that even more. And it is an amazing repertoire to have. My kids, grandkids, great-grandkids, somewhere down the line, if the Lord tarries, which I think still up in the air as to whether he is going to tarry or not, it'll be a place people could kind of connect with my story and my journey there. And maybe I write the autobiography someday, but I don't know if I'll get to that.
Yeah, I think that's just a beautiful space to have. And especially thinking about the numerous times that you thought about, well, this might be the end of it, or this might be coming to a close. And God's like, actually, we're just going to change this up, or we're going to bring a different space into it, or we're going to draw it into a different place. And I love that. I love that it hasn't been the structured, this is exactly what we do. You know, there's other podcasts out there, but they intend, like, it sets up a lifeline for that topic, right? Because you can only talk about one specific topic or one trajectory for so long unless you're willing to make it more just about life and about journey and the ever-growing unfolding of that.
Yeah, and it's been wonderful to have had a lot of people alongside that journey, and a lot of stuff that's come up on this podcast has come from other people's journeys, things they've shared with me, phrases and emails and things. And yeah, it's a wonderful record to have. But given the memory I have, I don't need to go back and hear anything yet. Because even when I start listening to an old podcast, I'll go, okay, remember this? Now this is what I said next. And that's this is crazy. It's like trying to watch a movie again. I lived that. And so I don't need necessarily go back there. But
yeah,
it's man, I have loved where this journey has taken me, the twists and turns, the ups and downs, the pains, the joys. It has all been, as I sit here looking back, from just a great joy. And I couldn't, and there had so many people alongside to explore it with us. It's been really fun.
Yeah.
And then we haven't been reading my books on here or doing things to stay on a certain theme. We've just kind of explored whatever has been hot and current. So best thing you heard this week, Kyle.
Best thing I heard this week, it actually circled back. I was talking to a friend of mine about loneliness, actually. So kind of circling back to some of the things that we talked about over the last couple of podcasts. And they were really wrestling back and forth. And it brought back this Brené Brown quote that said, fear is how we got here. And fear is the catalyst for additional loneliness. The fear is how we got to our current state, and fear will continue to be a catalyst for additional loneliness in our world. And that, man, that just resonated with the conversation that I was in, because there was a lot of fear around vulnerability and what is it like to even start those type of relationships? How do you cultivate them? How do you create a foundation for that type of relationship? And even just the very, very simple things that we don't think about anymore in regards to the way that we engage with people and the way that we connect with people.
Does that give someone hope, or, if fear is the way we got here, fear is the way we'll stay here kind of thing? Where's the hope in that for someone who feels like that's their cycle? Does she give that, or do you have a thought about how? Because I've never felt cycled by fear into loneliness. This is not my experience, but how would someone find hope if that's true, what you just shared?
One of the first things that I always encourage people to do is taking a risk and just trying things, and trying them within their window of tolerance. So, for example, if they say they haven't been connected with anybody for a really long time, and they're not sure where to even start with that or how to even go about that. One thing that I suggest is, like, okay, what is one person that's in your life on a regular basis, whether it be the barista at the coffee shop or somebody that you work with on a fairly regular basis, that type of thing, and just say hello and ask them how their day is with the intent to listen, not just to walk by them, but just with the intent to listen and to pause for a second. Something that simple of just trying that, or other ways where it's within their window of tolerance, but they could start taking those risks where they say, okay, yes, I have a fear here, but I'm not willing to allow that fear to have the final say, because for me, I want to be able to have those connections. I want to be able to have those relationships, that community. And so I want to find a way to overcome that fear.
So the hope would be, I guess, in some sense, hey, if fear's got me here and fear will keep me here, I need to find my way out of fear. The hope's got to be that Jesus can rewire, do what needs to be in me, that I can begin to take some steps against the fear I feel that's keeping me captive.
Yes.
And baby steps are okay. You don't have to make the big giant step into oblivion. You can begin to make little steps, like you said, just saying hi to somebody with the intent to listen to what they're saying. It's good. I like that.
Often I feel like our fears can quickly become bigger than the reality of the risk that we're about to take. And I think often those fears are informed by pain. They're informed by a challenging situation or a heartbreak or a loss, that type of thing. But when fear is allowed to stay internal, I think it quickly has the ability to metastasize to something that's quite a bit bigger than what the actual risk is.
And I've watched Sarah do that over the last year or so, you know, be able to walk against some of the things that have controlled her for so long. And fear is a big part of that. And shame is a big part of that. And to walk against that, just take what baby steps you can, begin to rewrite the script, let the untangling of the gold chains on the counter happen and let God do that. And I think the hope is that he will, he does. But as long as we stay in our fears and become imprisoned by them, then we're going to get the same results that we've had that have been so discouraging to us. So it might be good to, or where can I risk something I can handle with, like you said, inside your window of tolerance?
Well, and unfortunately, I think so often fear often becomes very familiar to us. Even though we don't like it, it becomes our familiar space. And so it's almost like, well, I'd rather deal with the demon that I know than the demon that I don't.
Or the joy that I don't.
Totally. Yes.
I dealt with that somebody this week. We had a conversation that one of those Brene Brown maxims, you cannot shut down your negative emotions without also shutting down your positive emotions. So if you're going to build a wall that keeps you from feeling sad, you're also going to build a wall that keeps you from feeling joy. You can't let in. And that's such a powerful thing for people that are caught in periods of brokenness, or even if they begin to experience joy or freedom in some way, but that makes them feel vulnerable because they come out from that wall, and then something happens that hurts more than it would have hurt behind their wall. The tendency is to run back in the wall, right?
Yeah.
And it's having the courage to, that's where change comes from. Having the courage to step out of things that normally I feel like I can handle on my own.
And this is one of the sad things that I think our culture has really lost sight of is the incredible ability for adventure to increase our resiliency in life. Because you think about it, both fear and adventure, they often have a lot of parallels, right? There's risk there. There's things that push us outside of our comfort zone. There's things that cause our stomach to flip-flop a little bit. And yet, when we cultivate an atmosphere and a life of adventure, that actually, I think, really is a powerful catalyst to helping us navigate or overcome fear in our life as well. When those things come up, when we start to have healthy adventure, healthy risk in our lives as a fairly regular basis, then when these other fears come up, there's a fortitude, there's a foundation, there's a resiliency in that that it, I think, helps mediate the process of disarming that fear.
But you're an adventure dude. I am too.
Oh, yeah.
People start talking adventure, my heart go, hello, what's going on? Other people hear about adventure and they're like, oh, life's enough of an adventure. I don't need any adventure. And so appeals to me. I hope that appeals. I think about every day being an adventure, current strain of the journey that Sarah and I are on, this current trek where we're not plotting out days. We don't have plans. We don't have a travel schedule. We don't have anything. We're just one day at a time. What's next, God? Where are you leading us, guiding us? And I love the adventure of waking up saying, God, where are we going to go today? And finding out as the day unfolds, not like God tells me we're going to do this and this, but then somebody will want to talk to me on my early morning walk. And that conversation opens up an amazing revelation in their heart or mine. And then an email later in the day underscores that. And that just go look back, go, that was a great day. Not a bit of it that was good was in my heart when the day started.
Yeah.
So I'm a guy given to adventure, and I've got friends that are, and I've got other people that really like the calm predictability of mundane living. That appeals to them in a way that it doesn't appeal to me, and I know doesn't appeal to you.
I have a hard time even believing that. And maybe it just is like so against who I was created to be, but I have a hard time believing that a person could be completely satisfied with a mundane, comfortable, risk adverse life. Maybe I'm wrong in that, but
yeah, I don't know that it would be enjoyable, but I think their sense of adventure is disaster. So I'd rather stay in the calm zone of nothing bad is happening. Not, I took some risks and maybe, yeah, some days don't sort out so well. Other days, you know, sort out with joy. So yeah, I do think people enjoy the calm. There are days when I would say I would love for nothing to happen today.
That's fair. That is completely fair.
But my whole life wouldn't go that way. That's for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Jess and I have been in this process of making the move up to Sheridan for the teaching position, but some other things too that we've just really felt God inclining our hearts towards. And that's been really exciting, but man, it's been, I was wrestling with it the other day. I was out on a walk and I was like, man, God, like, have I gotten comfortable? Like, have I gotten soft? Like, literally that was what I asked him. I was like, have I gotten soft, Lord? Because there's, you know, the stress of moving, trying to find a place to live and, you know, all those things. Like has pushed me to a point where I'm like, man, I don't know if I can deal with this, you know? And I was thinking about it this weekend when I was up in the mountains and I was like, Father, have I gotten soft in this? Like, have I not cultivated or have I gotten apathetic in the familiar, in the comfortable, in the mundane to where this is like really pushing me to the edge of my window of tolerance in a pretty serious way. And I'm okay with it. Like, I'm glad that it is. I don't want my daughters or my wife to have to be the victim of me getting back into the swing of adventuring on a regular basis. So that part I've had to really, even just today, take a check of being like, okay, Kyle, no, this is the adventure that you asked for. This is the process that you asked for. So don't be a jerk in the midst of it because you're stressed. You need to figure out how to laugh through that and enjoy that and take time in those moments. But that's still a work in progress at the moment. So
I hear you. Yeah, I think after the adventure we've had for the last 16 months or maybe 13 months. I think both are looking forward to a period of calm, a period of sitting in our atrium, listening to the water trickle down the wall. And no, there's nothing challenging coming our way today, but today is not that day. So we'll see when it is.
But you think about like the speed that you've gone over the last 14 months, it's basically like the two of you have been doing like I don't even know what to equate it to, some epic race.
And a wagon train ride from Missouri to Oregon in the 1800s, mid 1800s. Yes.
But at full tilt to where you're literally sprinting with the horses outrunning the Indians all the time.
We're not sprinting. We're going at the pace of Sarah. There's no sprinting going on here. That's it's fair. A slow sink into danger. It's not a fast one. We're not running from the Indians. We're kind of walking, going, please don't see us. We're just going to move by quietly.
So after all of that, what is the best thing you heard this week?
Well, this is a couple of weeks ago, but it's a train of thought that has plagued me now, and I've enjoyed it. It's an adventure of thought. Adam Smith, who's a political commentator, said this: mercy to the guilty is cruelty to the innocent.
Ooh, say that again.
Mercy to the guilty is cruelty to the innocent. And I said, oh my gosh, okay. It's got words I like in there. Mercy is one of those. Innocent is one of those. When you just take somebody who's done something really horrible and atrocious and you give them mercy and you forgive them, which is what we all want for ourselves and we all want for people we love who do something stupid and wrong and painful and even hurtful to others. We want mercy. People who are the perpetrators of crimes in their family go to the court begging for mercy, right? Mm. But mercy to the guilty is cruelty to the innocent. Because now the innocent person feels like, wow, I don't know that I got justice, right? So I really think of how God processes through this. That's a political commentary about that. I get it. I get it in human physical terms. I also wonder, how does God deal with this? Because God's about mercy. We beg God for mercy. But when you give mercy, for instance, let's take it back to the worst part of American history. When you give mercy to the slaveholder, what have you said to the enslaved person?
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. We'll give that a pass. But you still got the hundreds of years of subservience and no history and no valuable ability to acquire goods and life and build a life of your own as a fellow human being. So that's where I think of that.
Yeah.
And then my friend Lewis, who if you haven't listened to the podcast, goes to the podcast, but Lewis and I still hang out a lot together. So I was talking about this with some of him, and he's having a series of dreams that God's processing through his life that are very adventurous, very dangerous, very hurtful. And he's being assaulted by these gang cartels when he's an 8-year-old kid. I mean, the dreams are just, violently vicious. And it's all part of some, I think, stuff surfacing in Lewis that God's untangling, which is beautiful. Yeah. In the midst of one of these, he's in the middle of all this, and he's being attacked by not just people, but animal-type people, creatures, in this dream. And he runs out of ammo, and they're about to be devoured. And Jesus breaks into the dream, and he says to Lewis, "Do you want vengeance? Or do you want justice?" And he's in the middle of this raging fight and people are being killed. And he's just like, we're just armed with vengeance. And what do you want? And he stops and he says, "I want justice." It's a good choice, right? In the dream, he's saying, "I want justice." And then Jesus responds, "Then you need to let me fight for you." Which means you don't know the difference. Right. That's what I take that. Yeah. And I hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. Go,
that's a Holy Spirit dream. I mean, I don't even think twice about going, oh my gosh, do you want vengeance or justice? I want justice. Well, if you want justice, now you're going to let Jesus fight it for you. Because if you fight, you're already in vengeance mode. You want to hurt people who hurt you. You want to hurt people who hurt people you love. So vengeance mode just puts more destructive in the world. So that whole thing of mercy to the guilty, which that's the heart of the mission of Jesus, to give us all mercy. We're all guilty. The Father has come to bestow on us mercy so we can be forgiven and have a fresh start. And yet that in some way is cruelty to the other innocent. So that maybe that's what I've wondered. I haven't kind of come to conclusions here yet, but I wonder why that's so important for Jesus. where he gave us the keys to the kingdom to be forgive. What you forgive on earth, I'll forgive, because the innocent needs to be the one to do the forgiving, needs to be the one who gives mercy. Then it's not cruelty. If I've come to a place where I can forgive and give mercy, and then I think if you've received mercy as one who has perpetrated hurt on someone else, then your next thing, and we hear stories of this occasionally in the media where, you know, a drunk driver kills somebody's parents and then the family adopts that son. And, you know, there's some really amazing stories of how the perpetrators become part of healing, and not enough of those stories.
Yeah.
But I do think that's somehow in the life of Jesus would call those who have been mercied to not just say, well, I got away with it, hallelujah. Yeah. But now, how do we, if we go back to the enslaved, how do we give reparations for those? And I know it's a loaded word and people can go politically nuts for me. I just mean in the early days, not 50 years later, in the early, or 150 years later, in the early days of saying, okay, we've enslaved these people for generations. And they came up with, you know, some land and a mule or whatever, and then didn't even follow through on that. So that's why the thing is still, we were incredibly economically disadvantaged in many ways, still are. So that hangs on. And so this is blowing me away, but I love processing through this. Okay, where's mercy? Where's the defense of the innocent? Where is vengeance, which is never going to be good? And where's justice? And the only one, this is where I come to with all of our idea, the only one can sort out, that just looks like a big Rubik's Cube, which I suck at. So I'm not saying, I do those in 30 seconds like those kids on TV. I'm not that guy. I've never solved a Rubik's Cube ever. But that's what it looks like to me, except Jesus knows how. I know how to put mercy, cover the innocent, do justice without vengeance. And yet we've got scripture. I know I'll get this one. Romans 12, you know, don't be vengeful, because let God, you know, don't pay back evil for evil, because vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. And if you grew up with a home team away team, you really like a vengeful God who's going to whack people who've done you bad. Except that same God's going to whack you for having done bad to others yourself, particularly in your religious arrogance. You've done really harm to a lot of people.
Yeah.
I love putting all that in Jesus and just saying, okay, God, sort that out for me. Where do I need mercy? Where do I give mercy? Where do I defend the innocent? And how do I defend the innocent without resorting to vengeance? And how do I let you fight the battle? But I'm still in the battle. It's not enough to say, I like the status quo, so I can ignore the pain that others have caused, whether it's been through me personally or through the system I'm involved in. Yeah. It has produced pain in people. How am I involved in that? And it leads to a whole lot of exploration and no principles to follow to get there.
Well, and that's where I feel like his incredible healing power. I still don't understand how people could say that God stopped doing miracles on the planet today. I don't understand that, because this in and of itself, for God to untangle that and to be able to hold the heart of the person that might be the perpetrator that's receiving mercy, and the heart of the innocent that was the victim of that crime and or that situation, and being able to move that multifaceted thing where both hearts are cared for through it all. There's no way that human wisdom can handle that. Right. There's no way, there's so many moving pieces in that Father has to work and pull and nudge and breathe life back into, in order for that to happen in such a way where the innocent is not feeling victimized by the mercy being given to, re-victimized by the mercy being given to the perpetrator or the person receiving mercy. Yeah, it just, to do that in a way that both hearts are given an invitation to a deeper level of freedom, healing, and wholeheartedness is mind-blowing to me. It's miraculous. It's genuinely miraculous.
One of the first words of counsel I got coming on staff, fresh out of college, coming on staff at a church, and we were talking about salaries and payments and coming up for review and all that kind of stuff. I remember the pastor saying to me, well, here's one thing I learned in ministry a long time. It's the most important thing you need to know, or one of the most important things. I said, yeah, what's that? I said, never expect any church or board to pay you what you're worth. God will do that. Now, I realize looking back that that was said because we're not going to pay you what you're worth. I realize when it comes from the people who are actually paying your salary, that's not great encouragement, right?
Mm.
But it's nonetheless true. I have been, when I have been cheated by people, and I mean genuinely economically mistreated in a way that has cost me significantly.
And I go to them, I always do, and just say, hey, listen, I think we got some things here we could clean up, fix up, because I just, you know, a project we did together, and yet the effort wasn't 50-50. Maybe the payout shouldn't be 50-50. And we agreed to that before we started, because when you collaborate, you never know. So can we sit down and have that conversation? We said we would, and then you have that conversation, and the other person just gets really angry, like, well, how dare you? No, we didn't put the same amount of effort, but it's a project we shared together. And I say, okay, I'm not, and this is by somebody who was well more financially well off than I was. I mean, well more situated financially at a time when we were groping to just put together a month's worth of living and God was providing a month at a time.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, that's just not fair. And I went home and talked to Jesus because they just were not going to contemplate it because they didn't have to. And so they weren't. And I remember sitting down and God said, don't worry, I'm going to make this up to you. And he has in more ways than I could tell. Everywhere I've been cheated by people, God has more than made up what I lost there. Whether it's being cheated or even at times when God's asked me to be generous beyond that, give something away, would have been potentially a earning thing for Livestream way back in the early days.
Yeah.
And I know God has given us back way more than whatever we gave away. And I know God has provided for Sarah and I beyond any way we've been cheated by people. We've been cheated by a number of people. It's not just limited to one or two situations, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I don't mind getting into stuff without contracts being nailed down and all that, because a contract simply only protects me if I'm going to get lawyers and sue you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, a contract's not worth the paper it's written on. If you're going to ignore it and you're going to defy me to sue you, you already know I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get lawyers and go sue you. If you don't have the integrity of your own word, I'm not going to make a judge make you. I'm just not, unless you're coming at me for something that would destroy me or my family. I'd defend that. So I do know from the victim standpoint, I know that it seems like, okay, they got mercy because they didn't pay anything. But God made it up to me in other ways through other means. So if I was looking for vengeance or I was looking for justice in the sense that I got what I needed from them, then I could live frustrated saying, I got cheated, I got ripped off, I got whatever. But if God made up for what other people did to cheat me, now you don't really get to complain about anything, right? Because I can say, yeah, they cheated me, but you know, God, you gave me more. So it's a wash. Genuinely, a wash in your heart as well as just a wash in terms of, I got justice, but I got it from God. I didn't get it from the person who wronged me. I got justice from my Father, who took care of my needs, who loved me in the midst of where other people were trying to take advantage. But if you don't get there, if you just felt like somebody exploited and damaged you and you didn't get that fixed, by God or by circumstance, by some other way that God was going to make up for what others had done to you. And I was, I was schooled. I know I talk about a lot of things I was schooled in growing up that didn't, or that weren't great. One of those is the Joel language of, I will repay the years that the locust has eaten and devoured. I will, I will, that you really, okay. The equality of life, the justice of life, can really be found in a God who's bigger than the injustices of humanity, because they are great. But if you get lost in the injustices of humanity, and I know I'm saying this as a white male who doesn't have the systemic kind of cruelty of generations of being repressed and held under. I realize that.
Yeah.
But I hope even for people who've had the other, that looking to God to fulfill in you what man has failed for you, what humanity has failed for you, I hope that's an answer for them too. I do. I realize that's a bigger ask than what it asks of me. But in this whole idea, and it's not a pass on the guilty. It's just not. I don't know how all that works out in eternity. I really don't. I think if you've perpetuated great evil in the world, to me, oh, you're going to burn forever in hell. That doesn't answer it. It does not answer that. That's vengeance, not justice. I don't know how all that works out, but I do know a God I trust to work it out. And that gives me comfort.
That's really interesting advice. That's the first, some of the first advice that a pastor gave you as you're coming on staff to prepare you for the journey that you're about to embark on.
How we're going to abuse you. Yes. The truth of it is still there.
Yeah.
It's still true. If you look for humanity to give you what you deserve, you're going to need a lot of lawyers or you're going to lose a lot. If you're looking for something else, and if you're looking for God who's big enough to say, Wayne, I'm going to take care of you and provide for you in spite of the fact that others are going to cheat you, in spite of the fact that you're going to get lured into things that aren't the best in the end of it all or not fair. And that changes. I mean, I used to, one of my greatest whines of life was how unfair life is. And I've noticed for the last 25 years, that language has dropped away because, yeah, I will still say life is incredibly unfair, but I have a very gracious God who's not limited to what life doles out to me, not in the pain, not in the inequity. Not, it's big enough for God to walk me through that. And I'm, so I don't sit here jaded over the fact that, because people ask me, man, you've been through some rough stuff trusting people. Yeah. I think, I have.
Yeah.
Why? Because I don't feel cheated. In the long run, God was bigger than their cheating. Now, does that still have some character issues with them? Would I trust again somebody who's cheated me in business, who's never owned it, never sought to reconcile? No, I won't trust you in this life ever again without some relational repair, some resilience. But if they're unwilling, if they just want the mercy pass, I guess take it. I don't know where that's going to lead you eventually. Because not only did you cheat me, I suspect you're still cheating people. I suspect you're still lying to people. Yeah. I suspect you're leaving a wake of people, leaving in your wake people who feel like, man, you just exploited me for what you wanted and then left me here. And I've heard that about people. I've heard about that about some of the people who have exploited me. Oh, yeah. As long as they're getting something from you, they'll be a friend. But when that ends, then you won't matter to them at all. And I've lived that. But I don't sit around feeling like, yeah, my life's been really hard because everybody, I live with a generous God. I have so many more friendships that are awesome that the few that went sideways, they don't trouble that. They just don't trouble me. I hope for healing in this life, but I'm not banking on it.
And that's what I remember talking with you about this earlier on in our friendship and just asking you, like, how do you keep your heart open when you have had the number of betrayals and some of the things? Because it's not like the few betrayals that you've had were just, you know, nicks. They were deep artery bleeds, you know, I don't know how to say that. You're going to have to cut that out. But anyway, very, very deep wounds.
Yes. I get it. Artery spurting. It's very graphic. I don't know. Go back to that.
Thinking about that and just like, it wasn't like this nick, but it was a very, very deep wound. And yet your comment back was the joy and the life that I've found in the friendships that I do have was well worth the pain and the challenges that I've had to go through because of some of the things that you were willing to open up your heart to, and they didn't turn out as well, or they didn't turn out the way you'd envisioned them.
And I can still celebrate the friendship and the joy of it. I remember the joy of working on that together and the camaraderie we shared. That was powerful.
Yeah.
Just because in the end, they couldn't hold to their end of the deal. And that was incredibly painful. There's not one of those I've been through that I have not wept with horrible tears for days as God sorts out in my life how he can take me beyond. And I've come to treasure. Used to be the scripture, count it all joy when people lie about you, insult you, and exclude you in my name. One of the last beatitudes. Somehow we conveniently leave off when we talk about those things. And yet now, it used to be, okay, I consider it joy. I know it's not. I know it hurts. I know Jesus told me to. So as a discipline, I'm going to count it joy when you have screwed me over. To now, I know the transformation that comes from a merited rejection or a merited betrayal. Like Peter said, if you suffer because you've done wrong, then that's not suffering that's going to be helpful. But if you haven't done the thing you're being accused of, And if you didn't deserve what people do to you, there is a depth of untangling that necklace or those Christmas lights that comes when you let God walk you through the unmerited rejection of people you love and still love, even in their rejection of you, you still love them. You've not allowed your heart to go vengeful, so I'm giving hate for hate. I don't. I tell you what, the last 3 years has been incredibly transformative in that environment. When unmerited betrayal, rejection comes from people I love. And then last year, that included Sarah, right? Seriously, now it's unmerited. It was trauma in her, but she had it focused on me in ways. And even the most precious relationship of my life, God was sufficient to walk me through that. And in the midst of that rejection, or the feelings of rejection, untangle some stuff in me that I still treasure to this moment sitting here, that I'll go, oh, so glad you were able to do that. I would like it to have been done another way. Don't get me wrong.
It's that
tagline for the Shack, which I came up with when we were trying to figure out a book cover, triumph out of tragedy or something like that. You know, God's ability to take tragic. And now I sit with people in their tragedies today. I know they can't see it yet. They don't know it yet. But I know there's a triumph in here. God's bigger than this. And I don't just say that because that just seems like a pat answer that's not worth anything in someone's pain.
Yeah.
As a person who's cheering them through it, I know that he's bigger than this.
Yeah.
And I know he has a way, even not to get back from the person who did me wrong, what I deserve. That's a road that you will dry up going down that road.
Yeah.
But when you can say, God, how are you bigger than this for me? Now I can find justice and mercy and innocence all in the same reality inside of God without it being what so many people think, which if I forgive you, I give you a pass. And I just don't think that's what it means at all. It's the good riddance to the negative effect of what you did on my heart and the tenderness of that heart being offered to God so that whatever he wants to form in me can be formed in those moments of abject pain.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting element of being a hope holder for people in that space too.
Yeah.
That when you've navigated that and you've endured that and you have, and God has brought other people alongside of you to help create that resiliency and that endurance, that deep-seated foundation in your life to be a hope holder for others, especially when they're going through the thick of it. And you can't, you don't necessarily like, oh yeah, there's hope in the end. There's light at the end of the, I mean, those cliche answers that tend to bug the heck out of people that are really struggling, but man, to be a cheerleader, a sojourner, a fellow traveler that is able to hold hope is pretty incredible.
And that's 2 Corinthians 1, right? Yeah. Paul, despairing even of life, so that the comfort God gives us comforts you. That's a great part of community.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.